Hi, and welcome to the Future of Dermatology podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Farah Kamangar, board-certified dermatologist. We are here to talk about anything and everything dermatology related. You'll hear from me and my guests who are dermatologists, physicians, experts, scientists, residents, and medical students in the field of dermatology. We publish weekly, so if you like what you hear, hit that subscribe button and show us some love. And thank you for joining us.
Right. Well, welcome to the Future of Dermatology podcast. We are very grateful today to have two fantastic interviewers. We have Dr. Wilson Liao, who is a forever mentor of mine. So this is a really, really exciting episode. And of course, we have Chandler Johnson, who has been on multiple of our episodes. She is a fantastic medical student currently working with Dr. Liao. So I love that it's closing the loop. I did this research fellowship with Dr. Liao many years ago now, and Chandler is currently in that position, probably doing a much better job at it. But Dr. Liao is professor. Yes, absolutely. And Dr. Liao is a professor and associate vice chair of research at the University of California, San Francisco Department of Dermatology. And he also serves as the director of the UCSF Psoriasis and Skin Treatment Center and Clinical Research Center. Dr. Liao does a lot of just amazing, innovative research. And so much of it is focused around the genetics and the environmental triggers of psoriasis. He's given so many interesting talks in the past. I feel like we'll probably need 8 to 9 hours to, you know, really cover all the topics, but we'll try to do the highlights in a short amount of time. I remember even years ago, a captivating talk that he gave on psoriasis and genetics and why psoriasis has persisted for so long through the decades and generations and the thousands of years because of the survival advantage that it's kind of given in the past, and also touching on things like cures and the, you know, genetic changes, and then also the active clinical research that they're doing. I'm so excited to hear about the current activity of what's going on at the UCSF Clinical Trial Center. And then, of course, at the end, we're going to have Chandler's help also in covering some of just what it is right now, what it's like to be in this fellowship and things Dr. Liao looks for when electing a medical student and that whole topic. So thank you both so much for joining.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. And then so Dr. Liao, since there's so much of your wisdom that I want to tap into, I might just do a round of questions, and you feel free to say as little or as much about either one. So I would just love to hear about so much of the genetic work that you do, any of the latest updates, new genes discovered for psoriasis, are there cures on the horizon?
Yeah, fantastic question. And this is the genetics of psoriasis is a passion of mine, because when I first started out as faculty, that was like my first project of interest. And at that time, we knew of like 3 psoriasis genes. And now fast forward like 15 years later, and we are over 100 psoriasis genes that have been identified. So we're making amazing progress through lots of collaborations across the US and worldwide, really. It's pretty amazing. We're now starting to learn more about not only what causes psoriasis genetically, but how these genes relate to like what type of psoriasis you'll get. Like, we know, of course, people get psoriasis in different areas of the body, some on the trunk and some on the arms, scalp, inverse areas. So we're starting to understand how the genetics relates to like how the psoriasis will look on your skin. A big one for us is psoriatic arthritis, right, which is very debilitating. And we're now using machine learning and other AI methods to take the genetic hits and to try to predict, given a particular genetic background, like what's the likelihood like a particular person will go on to get psoriatic arthritis, which would be very helpful for them to help kind of prevent that. So many different things with genetics. So it's been really an amazing journey just over the past decade and a half.
That's fantastic. And do you find, is it that the therapeutics that we have are kind of helping us work backwards to find the genes? Or is it the other way now that we have some genes and then we can make some proteins and maybe use AI to come up with kind of targeted therapies or a mixture of both? I guess, yeah, how are the genes connecting to the therapies now that we have?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think they're kind of being discovered in parallel. Like, as we're discovering, you know, these important cytokines for for therapy. At the same time, we were discovering that these also are psoriasis genetic hits. And a lot of the work has been like, hey, can we use genetics to predict who's going to respond to like which biologic or, you know, which therapy? And there's actually been some progress in that area. Like our lab looked at a drug called ustekinumab, which I know you're very familiar with, or Stelara. And we found a gene variant that can almost twofold predict your response to Stelara. And so there's hope that in the future that could become more clinically useful. The most famous psoriasis gene of all, HLA-C0602, has been found to people who have that gene also respond better to Stelara, and people who don't have that allele tend to respond better to TNF-alpha blockers like adalimumab. So there's a lot of excitement in this precision medicine space. I think we're still a little bit away from like making it into the clinic to make it, you know, like useful like to everyday clinicians. But I think it's exciting that we're getting there.
It's so exciting. And I think it's so much closer now than when I was a medical student working with you. I think we kind of talked about these thoughts like, what if one day, and now it's so close. It's like almost there. You could almost see from the lab, you know, the bench to bedside, it's happening like 100 folds, right? The speed of it. So it's so fascinating. I mentioned the kind of the talk you'd given in the past about just why these genes have persisted evolutionary. I think that concept is so interesting, like its survival advantage it has given and why it's kind of propagated.
Yeah, I'd love to expand on that. You know, one of the things that I thought about pondering in my bedroom when I first started out in this field is like why does psoriasis even exist, right? Like why would someone want to have like scaly red plaques all over their skin, and like, or what part of evolution does that help you with? And when we started looking at the psoriasis genes, one of the interesting things we found is that a lot of the psoriasis genes are advantageous for fighting off viruses, antiviral immune responses, and in fact, we found a really fascinating parallel between patients with psoriasis and patients who have a very unique phenotype called basically HIV non-responders, or HIV patients who don't, HIV non-progressors. So the HIV non-progressors are patients who have HIV, who get HIV infected, but without any therapy at all, they fight off the HIV virus. They don't actually need heart. They don't need medications. They just spontaneously maintain HIV at a very low level in their body. It's like, oh my gosh, how does the body do that? And it turns out that these, you know, elite controllers or these non-progressors, they tend to have almost a very similar genetic profile to patients with psoriasis. And so kind of my concept is that, you know, there's all these genes that are in our bodies that help us defend against bacteria, viruses, different things. And particularly the ones for viruses, you know, are beneficial to fight off the bad viruses. But when they get activated unnecessarily, they cause psoriasis. So like these genes are like dual-edged swords. Like in one sense, they're beneficial for like fighting off viruses in the right situation. But in a different context, when they're being like activated for the wrong reasons, they give you, you know, the inflammation of the skin and you get psoriasis. So it's kind of like a dual-edged sword. But I thought that was really fascinating.
Yeah, that is so fascinating. And it totally makes sense, because I guess in the history of the world, there have been so many microbes trying to kill us all that you can definitely understand why certain genes would be advantageous to have if they're fighting off the major infections of like a prior time. And now we don't have many of those infections around anymore. So they start attacking, you know, our like metabolic system and things like that, our cardiovascular system. The arthritis information is so interesting. Do you think that's kind of getting close to being clinically relevant, of where we could like test for these genes and then maybe start patients that are at higher risk for psoriatic arthritis like earlier on maybe more heavy duty medication, even though they might have like a single plaque somewhere on their skin, but maybe not necessarily correlating with if they're going to develop arthritis or not?
I definitely think the field is moving towards earlier, more aggressive intervention to see if we can head off psoriatic arthritis, but also, you know, some of the comorbidities of psoriasis. There's actually a trial going on now with some of my colleagues. Dr. Jose Scher at NYU is involved as well, where they're taking patients who have psoriasis and like ultrasound abnormalities of their joints, but they don't have full psoriatic arthritis yet. And they're randomized into either treatment with guselkumab, which is an IL-23 inhibitor, or topicals and phototherapy. And then follow over time to see is like if you treat a patient with psoriasis and sort of like pre psoriatic arthritis symptoms kind of earlier, can you like prevent the development of psoriatic arthritis? So I think it's really interesting. There's a lot of interest in can we do preventative medicine? Can we, you know, once someone already has joint damage, right, it's hard to reverse that. So ideas, can you get ahead of the curve?
And I guess that the one other question, it just makes you think. So if somebody has, let's say a family member has the genes, do we still know much about that? They don't have even psoriasis yet or psoriatic arthritis, but maybe a family member does. And then you test everybody in the family and a couple have the gene. Do we know necessarily yet which genes are like, you're definitely going to get it versus you just don't know. And then you need the environmental triggers, which can then also lead to, let us know about that connection of the genes and the environmental triggers.
Yeah, and from the genetics work that we and others have done so far, it looks like just using DNA profiling alone, you can kind of predict with maybe up to 70 to 80% accuracy whether someone will go on to develop psoriatic arthritis. And then now where the field is going is like the genetics might provide like a baseline, but can you add like maybe like a blood test or a skin biopsy or something else to give you more information to be a little bit more precise. One thing that's fascinating is that we already know in patients with psoriasis that like if you have a nail psoriasis, inverse psoriasis, scalp, you're more likely to also have psoriatic arthritis. So there's already some like clinical markers that we have. And there's a University of Toronto has actually developed this tool called Presto, where it kind of takes all these factors together and then you put it into like a little calculator and you can kind of get a risk estimate of whether you're likely to develop PSA. So I think these tools are starting to be kind of developed, and hopefully they'll be automated into the EHR such that like the clinician will just give like a little pop-up message and say like, hey, your patient's at higher risk of psoriatic arthritis. Please send them to rheumatology for like a screening or things like that.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. Like that's where the future is going. And the environmental triggers, I know you've done a lot of work around that. So let's say you have the genetics, kind of what other pieces are necessary to then make the whole psoriasis picture?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm so fascinated by environmental triggers because, you know, we're all born with this set of genes at birth, but we develop psoriasis at different times and different severity. And some of the things that have been found are for sure obesity, that whatever it is in those adipocytes or those fat cells can help trigger the onset of psoriasis. And for a while, it was a little bit of a chicken and egg. Like, does the psoriasis come first and then you get sedentary and you get obese? Or, you know, does obesity come before? And some of these more modern genetic studies actually have shown that obesity can, by itself, can predate the psoriasis and basically help cause the psoriasis. So that's really interesting. Diet is also a really interesting, I think, area. One of my colleagues at UC Davis, as you probably know, Dr. Sam Huang, has done some really interesting studies in mice, feeding them like either the Western diet, which is like, you know, high in sugar, kind of high in fat, and these mice kind of get psoriasis. And then if you feed them kind of a more normal diet, it goes away. So we think that like diet can play an important role in triggering psoriasis. Infections, of course, you know, strep throat, things like that, viruses. The environment plays a really important role. And actually, smoking too was recently found in our study to be an important trigger for psoriasis.
Yeah, no, that's so interesting. And the diet question is one we always get in clinic. I don't think we have specific really answers. It's usually exactly just eat healthier.
Yeah.
It seems to me, you know, there's data there, but that's a tough one. But I think people always asking about specific foods or like you know, the magical, you know, vegetable that's going to clear everything. But it does seem to be kind of just a holistic lower BMI and just eating well in general.
Yeah, that's as you mentioned, like one of the most popular topics or questions I get in my clinic. Like, it's not like, which biologic should I start, Dr. Liao? It's like, hey, what can I do with my diet and my lifestyle, which I definitely understand. And yeah, usually we recommend kind of the Mediterranean diet, which, you know, in many studies has been shown to be like beneficial for your overall health, but also possibly for psoriasis, and then trying to maintain a good weight. I think an interesting hot topic now with these new weight loss drugs is whether starting something like that can improve psoriasis as well. So that's a future area of interest, I think.
Yeah, that's so interesting, because we know even for our patients who are maybe more obese, higher BMIs, our treatments don't work as well as they would for even the biologics. Some of them, the efficacy is a little lower. So you almost wonder now if that paradigm will sort of shift in the next few years, where the first line, maybe even before a psoriasis-specific biologic, is starting one of these other injectables for weight loss. And then maybe seeing what happens there first before we put them on kind of chronic biologic therapy. And then the other question it kind of brings up, I don't know if necessarily there's a lot of data on this, but do we kind of know if there's other pathways in which these medicines are helping? Because I think we've all heard the stories of like patients getting totally clear with just going on one of these weight loss injections and their psoriasis kind of getting clear. It could just be that their BMI went down, but I just wonder if there's another pathway associated there, where it might be anti-inflammatory otherwise, or I don't know if we know much about that, but.
I think there are other pathways that we are still yet to discover. And there's also metabolic activity of cells. That's kind of a hot area as well. I think, and there are kind of new drugs coming out or being tested in clinical trials that I'm going to target things that aren't, you know, your traditional IL-23, IL-17, TNF. So there are other pathways and targets that are kind of being looked at, for sure.
Yeah, no, it's so exciting. The field is just kind of booming.
It's a great time to be a psoriasis physician in that, you know, we have what, 12, 13 plus different options. And when I first started out, we had like two options, right? So it's great that you're almost like in a candy store. Like, I don't know like where to go. There's so many different options.
It's true. I think when I was a med student, we were doing still trials with like etanercept and Humira. And so now there's just so much more out there. And that actually leads me to the next question. There's so much coming out, and so much of it is actually being done by your group. So I would love to actually hear about your current studies and what you and Chandler and the team are kind of working on, if there's things we could all enroll in. You guys are doing the most cutting edge research.
Yeah, thanks for asking. I mean, part of my lab is very interested in using kind of the latest, you know, omic technologies to understand psoriasis. And so one of the studies that we're doing now is whether we can treat patients with guttate psoriasis and treat them pretty hard with a biologic therapy and see if we can kind of get them to kind of go into remission. And at the same time, we're doing like single cell sequencing from those patients to look at the molecular profile. Another one that Chandler can talk to you a little bit about is this almost the same question on the eczema side. So we all know that Dupixent has been a great medication that we've used in the clinic for our atopic dermatitis patients. But there are some Dupixent failures, you know, some patients who don't respond or who lose response over time. And right now we're profiling patients who have either responded to Dupixent or not responded to see what's different kind of molecularly between the two. And that's another study that we're actively enrolling for. And then Chandler, do you want to talk a little bit about our skin tracker studies?
Yeah, absolutely. I just want to say thank you again for having me on. It's really fun to be on this podcast with both of you, two of my amazing mentors in the Bay Area. And just y'all been so amazing this year with helping me learn all about clinical trials and getting involved in super cool projects like Skin Tracker, like Dr. Liao was mentioning. So we have two different Skin Tracker projects going on right now. One that's NIH funded and then one that's funded by Janssen. But since we're talking more about personalized medicine and sequencing of different samples, I'd love to focus in on the NIH Skin Tracker project, which is really cool. This particular project is aiming to develop an app which has a photo portion where we're trying to collect images that a patient would actually be collecting at home. So it helps make clinical trials more accessible to patients, because I feel like a limiting factor for a lot of these visits is the in-person component. And we want to make sure that people from, you know, a wide variety of settings, especially rural settings, can have access to be involved in really the cutting edge research that's being done, especially at UCSF. So there's that element of the photo-taking modules for Skin Tracker. There's also an element of blood draws, which can be actually done at home through capillary blood draws with a new device. It's not FDA approved yet, but it's been tested and it's been proved to be safe. And you can actually get those blood samples collected at home, and it can give us some more insights to really what's going on like a molecular level for patients that have atopic dermatitis. And also psoriasis patients will be involved in that project as well. So really getting a great view at environmental factors impact on inflammatory skin conditions like those. So that's been really fun and really a cool opportunity to work on the app development side of things. Like, these are areas that I never imagined that I'd be involved in, you know, starting medical school. I never, you know, imagined that I'd be working hand in hand with app developers or learning more about these really novel devices that have potential to make such an impact on the field in terms of like the research and that information that we'll be getting from the project itself and really how the projects are done in general. So it's been really fun so far.
And Chandler has been amazing. She's been these are complicated projects with large teams, working with IT developers and people who work with the device, the home capillary devices. And Chandler has been great, just amazing at coordinating everything and making sure everything's on schedule. So can't say enough about her work.
Thank you so much. I'm lucky because I'm very detail oriented, and this is definitely a project with small details. So it's been fun for me.
Yeah, a lot of it is just the project management, isn't it? That's fantastic. Both of those sound amazing. One is the health equity piece, because we know a lot of times clinical trials can be so skewed because of just literal logistical access to an academic center, driving, missing work, driving to visits. So some populations have just historically not been included, really, just because of those barriers in a lot of clinical trials. So work like this is really life-changing and kind of changes the data and for the health equity piece. That's incredible. So it's probably, I'm sure, a lot of nitty-gritty details, but just the social implications of work like this is fantastic. And then the capillary testing, oh my gosh, that's just like mind blown from, you know, where the kind of the future is going. So are they going to, with the capillary blood that's collected, are genetic tests able to be run on that? Is that kind of the thought that it would kind of be run to look for the genes? And
yeah, what's actually amazing, Farah, is that from that capillary blood draw, which is like a little just plastic thing you put on your arm, you get enough blood that that's mailed by FedEx to a research facility where they actually can do single cell RNA sequencing from that little blood sample. So that's genetics, transcriptomics, and possibly even proteomics. So you can actually do all the latest molecular testing from that little tiny blood sample that you can collect at home.
Oh my gosh, that's incredible. And are they, I'm gonna ask some questions now that are gonna make it very obvious that I'm not a basic scientist and a general dermatologist in clinic. Can you kind of check, like, can you do it whole exome kind of testing on that much blood? Or is this something like you're only gonna check for like the 100 known genes of psoriasis, or kind of limited testing for specific gene targets?
Yeah, that's a great question. In theory, you actually can do the whole exome or even the whole genome if you wanted to. For this particular project, we're focusing more on the RNA side, the transcriptome, because as you know, the genome is sort of static. You're kind of born with it, but then, like, you know, the RNA kind of fluctuates with like disease flares, right? So for this project, we're planning to isolate the cells from the blood and then do single cell sequencing for the RNA component. But we'll be storing the blood samples, and so we have the DNA as well. So you can kind of do it all if you want.
You can kind of go back and do other things to it if you wanted to. So there's the DNA. Again, I'm going to go back to really simple questions here. So you have the DNA, you're going to sequence the RNA. Are there also a lot of research? I know like other fields, I've seen a lot of this where like the proteins are then being created, and then like the AI models are looking at the protein targets, things like that. Are there kind of follow-up, are those kind of follow-up steps from there? Or is it mostly that you just really want to know the RNA and extrapolate information from that?
Yeah, I think people are definitely exploring the protein side now more, that now that the technology is improving for proteomics. Proteins are a lot more stable than RNA. RNA, as you know, can degrade or be unstable, but proteins tend to just like kind of hang out there and be more robust. So there is definitely a lot of interest in using proteins, and some of our ongoing projects combine RNA and protein together and kind of look at them side by side. So I think that's where the future is going, is maybe not just looking at one aspect of autoimmune disease, but sort of multiple aspects at the same time.
Yeah, this is so fantastic. And I guess the basic question is, how can, if someone's listening to this and wants to be a healthy control, or they have psoriasis or eczema, are these currently enrolling, projects that are currently enrolling, and you know, where can they look for more information?
Absolutely. Yeah, we're definitely enrolling both healthy controls and patients with either eczema or psoriasis. So folks can always reach out to me at my email address, wilson.liao@ucsf.edu. And I can put anyone in touch with our research coordinators to learn more about these studies.
That's fantastic. Perfect. And anything I missed about the clinical trials? If not, we'll move on to, I would love Chandler to ask you some questions about more on the research side of it, but in any trials that we missed or anything else we should touch on before we switch topics?
The one thing that maybe Chandler can talk a little bit more about is we have some really interesting psoriasis survey studies that we're doing right now. Chandler, do you want to talk about those two?
Absolutely. So we do have two surveys. We've been enrolling patients to complete those surveys for a couple months now. So we're trying to really collect quite a robust data set to get more insight into two questions of interest for us. The first of those is about menopause in psoriasis. So that, of course, it's going to be harder to recruit for just because we're assessing a very specific demographic. We will look during the clinic and see if an individual who is a female is at least 55 years of age or older, and then we'll go and ask them if they've gone through the menopausal change and if they have psoriasis, if they've been diagnosed by a dermatologist. So this question set is just seeking to find out if there's any sort of impact about menopause and psoriasis severity or even treatment, just because correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Liao, but some individuals report having psoriasis flares after menopause. So we're trying to get more insight into that. We also, this is a really cool project because we have a counterpart in South Korea who is also assessing her patient population with a similar question set, but translated. So we'll have a really cool, diverse cohort here in California. And actually, the survey is going to be broadcast through the NPF listserv to reach a wider population throughout the United States or the other subscribers of that listserv. So we're trying to get quite a few responses to that to see if we can get more insight into that question. What else would you like to add to that, Dr. Liao?
No, that was a great summary. Super excited to surprisingly, like when you look at the literature, there's very little known about how menopause might impact psoriasis, you know, whether it gets better or worse or requires any kind of treatment change. It's a real gap, I think. And of course, you know, we're counseling, you know, women as they, you know, go through that process. So it'd be nice to be able to give them a heads up as to, hey, this is kind of what you can expect. So we're hoping this survey will shed light on that question.
Lovely. And then the second survey that we're also recruiting individuals to respond to assesses both individuals with psoriasis as well as our healthy controls without psoriasis or eczema or other inflammatory skin conditions. And this is looking at sleep and psoriasis. So we're looking at things like sleep as well as mood and how there may be an interplay between both of those two aspects. So much easier to recruit for this survey because we're looking for any and all individuals with psoriasis to answer, no matter gender, sex, age group. So we've got quite a few responses so far. This is also going to be sent out through the NPF listserv too. So we're looking forward to that being sent out in March and getting even more robust data from that.
And part of this project is inspired by my amazing colleague, Dr. Tina Bhutani. I don't know if she's been on your show, Sarah.
Yeah, we've had Dr. Bhutani on too. We were actually talking about aryl carbon receptor, aryl hydrocarbon receptors. And I was asking her this question because in the non-dermatology research, there were some random studies alluding to the fact that it might be involved in sleep genes, these clock genes, and things like that. So of course I asked her this very esoteric question. I was like, well, you do a lot on speech and or sleep and psoriasis, if you haven't. So we touched upon that slightly about that association, but it's so fascinating, these questions that really we should have like clear answers to, that really when you look in the research, there are gaps for sure in both in hormonal changes at any age and sleep. These are huge questions to answer.
Yeah, Dr. Bhutani has really pioneered a lot of the sleep work, and she's doing another study where we actually bring psoriasis patients into the sleep lab at UCSF, and we hook up all the electrodes and do the polysomnography on the patients. And so that'll be interesting to see what that study shows too.
Does that have a healthy control as well?
It does. It does.
Oh, okay. We should all go do that just to see how we're sleeping.
Absolutely. Yes. We could all improve our sleep for sure.
And are there, for the surveys, Chandler, are there links to them that we could also put in the show notes, or would that be an appropriate place for them? Or do you prefer that the dermatologist sees a patient in clinic, verifies that they have psoriasis, and then give the survey link? Or is just self-proclaimed, you know, yes, I have psoriasis.
The language that we've used in our informed consent specifies, you know, that they've had psoriasis, you know, diagnosed by a dermatologist. So I feel like we're always looking for people to answer these surveys. I know I'm trying to disseminate against my personal network. So if we could reach the Future of Dermatology Network, that'd be amazing as well.
Listening, of course, it would be great if they could take the survey. If there's physicians listening, they could kind of think about those few patients that come to their mind immediately and maybe ask them to do that. Because these questions are so important to answer, and probably the more data points that are received, even the better. So. Fantastic, yeah.
Thank you for listening to the Future of Dermatology podcast. Remember to hit that subscribe button and share the podcast with your friends. The more you share and subscribe, the more we'll be able to grow and share our dermatology knowledge. If you have burning dermatology questions, feel free to leave them in the comment below, and we would love to address them in a future episode. And please note that this podcast is not intended to substitute for medical advice from your doctor.